Hi, this is Hope.
This is Kareem.
Hi, this is Katie from Washington, D.C., and you're listening to No Meat
Athlete
Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to No Meat Athlete Radio, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Fridays. That seems to be our time that we're doing it. No need for dancing or anything. Anyone? Doug, we're just doing a show here. There's no music or anything. We're just having a discussion.
Can always dance.
Isabel hasn't sat through the months that I endured of Doug dancing at the start of every plant-based morning show, coming up with a new thing every day. And I started to just hate it.
Those were the best days.
I don't know.
Hey, everybody, how's it going? I just, I was thinking back at, I was putting our discussion from last week to the test of what to eat, how to eat healthy when you have no time. I had 7 minutes between sending an email and needing to make and eat lunch before starting the show. I rolled in right on time. And I had an apple and peanut butter and a handful of nuts.
Okay. Solid choice.
That is a solid choice. Nuts and nut butter in one meal. That's a bold
move. It was nut butter while I was making the... I mean, it was nuts while I was making cutting up the apple.
Right. Okay. Well, nuts and peanuts are different, right? Peanuts are legumes.
And legumes.
Nuts are nuts.
That's true.
Yeah. So I guess it's not even overlap. So you got three food groups in there.
Well balanced meal right there.
There you go.
I'm still gonna probably be hungry.
Yeah. That's not bad though. That's a good choice.
That's a good snack. Yeah.
Yeah.
Snack. Apple peanut butter is a good snack.
Yeah.
Definitely. Maybe good for ultra running too, Doug, right? Would that be a decent ultra running snack? A little carbohydrate for now, fat for later.
Yeah, a great ultra running snack.
Good. Well, that's a perfect segue into our topic today. And I'm glad Bianca's here. And Jeff Hudnall too. I don't know about Kelly Kay and her running history or ambitions, but I know the other two do some running for sure. And the others who are here, but have just not commented. But hello to everybody. Happy Friday. Yeah, this is No Meat Athlete Radio. This is not the plant-based morning show. That's in the mornings on Tuesday through Thursday. But this is our live crew. We don't have Matt Tolman today, who's been joining us for No Meat Athlete Radio, and he's a part of it like all of us are. But we figured sometimes it's going to be three of us, but we're not going to move the time. We're going to keep it at this time for the foreseeable future and keep showing up. So good to see everybody. We decided we're talking about big goals today, but not in the normal like rah-rah kind of way. I think more of a critical look at them and when are they worth it and when are they not? Because I think that's an important thing. And as I've gotten older, I realize you do have to actually pick and choose what you're going to do because more things come along generally to take up your time. But you also run out of years, right? And like it, I don't know, at some point it becomes not worth it maybe to spend 5 years training or doing something. When there's the opportunity cost, you can't just do everything like maybe feels like you can when you're younger. So I don't know, like the context we have is, well, I was playing miniature golf with someone. I told on the morning show a few days ago that, and had a conversation.
I had a mini golf date.
Uh-huh. As a conversation that came up and he was doing this, what's the name of it, Isabel? You know. Murph marathon.
Oh Murph. Yeah, Murph challenge marathon.
Okay, and so the thing is, run a marathon. I think it's half marathon first, then do all this stuff. The stuff being 1,000 pull-ups, 2,000 push-ups, 3,000 sit-ups, 4,000 squats, I think, and then go do the other half of the marathon. And that's a serious training, right? That's like, I mean, I don't know if that's Ironman level amount of time it will take. Maybe not quite that long, but the 1,000 pull-ups, I mean, I can imagine, I mean, that would take you a couple of years, right? To get 1,000 pull-ups.
Easy. That'd probably be something I would set a big goal for and never get to, honestly, which is kind of what we're talking about today.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. And I don't mean to make light of that goal. Cause that's I'll never do that. Like, I don't think I'll ever be that strong to do that many pull-ups, that many push-ups, and then want to do a half marathon on either side of that. But then we started thinking, okay, like that's kind of just one of many goals that once you get beyond like the typical ultra marathon or even the typical marathon, it kind of starts turning into this anything goes thing. And like I said, I think that's a pretty respectable goal. eventually the ultra runners started dreaming up, like, I mean, Doug, you probably have examples of things people do that, like, it almost seems like they're just doing it so that they can say, I'm the only one or the first one who has done this thing. When the thing is more or less an arbitrary, like, I don't know, I guess there's some meaningful ones, like first one to, you know, go up and down the, who knows what mountain or what mountain range. Mm-hmm. But then it seemed to get weirder and weirder. And then it involved pushing groceries and baby strollers all the time, like self-supported versions of things, just so that you can say you did it first. And I, you know, that to me kind of starts to get dumb.
Well, see, the self-support, all right. We don't need to go on a fun tangent too big here, but self-supported and the pushing of the baby stroller, like, that's a whole other task, right? And, like, you know, you can run across America with a minivan behind you and a whole crew feeding you and massaging your legs every night. But then to run across America self-supported, you know, carrying all the stuff you need, like, to me, that's way cooler, honestly.
Two totally different challenges.
So it's not really about the, like, pushing of the baby stroller, carrying your food out of principle. It's just, it's like, I'm going to do this on my own. I'm not going to rely on a support van to, like, carry there.
So that one's not arbitrary. But then once you start getting to the end of Badwater and getting back,
you
skip the process of, I'm not going to take any aid from anyone, I'm just going to do it on my own. And then I'm also going to do some other thing. It just starts to become, to me, this random.
I'm going to do it while juggling.
Yeah. I say I don't want to do this.
I think it comes back to, like, people want to test themselves. And yes, I think there is probably some level of, what word am I looking for? Like, honor, maybe, in being the only one to have done this thing. So, like, I feel like that's a piece of it, but it's also people want to test themselves. They want to do harder and harder things. And so, like, if Doug goes out and he runs Badwater back and forth, like, I'm going to go do it back and forth and back again, because I want to do something harder than Doug can, because I want to prove myself more. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's what it is for most ultra runners. You probably have to have some amount of, I want to prove something to myself, not just to everyone else. But I'm not sure. I'm sure there's also people who just do it for whatever recognition they get.
Extrinsic motivation.
But yeah, probably. So, you know, I'm not trying to, like, belittle anyone who's doing the double Badwater or anything like that. I mean, I think, you know, if anyone has a challenge like that, that gets them excited, like, that's great. But for me, like, you got to wonder, why not just run Badwater harder and see, you know, because if you're trying to do a double Badwater, then you're leaving a lot in the tank, right?
But you might not be able to. Like, speaking as you know, Doug, I run a long time, but really slow. So, like,
yeah, right.
But if you had to double that run,
you'd run even slower, right? I mean, like,
yeah, but then I'm still doing more.
Yeah.
I don't know who I'm advocating for right now. Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying that there are different aspects and different goals that people can have. And maybe that's a part of this conversation, is like, what is worth it to you? And why is it worth it to you to do that thing that you're trying to do?
Yeah. And I think that's really the heart of the conversation, I hope, is like, what actually is worth it? And why? And, like, what does it take to make something worth it? Because I've had goals. You know, I thought before about Badwater, I thought that would be an incredible thing to do. And when I had not yet run a 100-miler, I thought that's something I'd like to do one day. But then after I ran 100 and scratched that itch and said, okay, I've done that thing, like, I really just lost motivation for trying to do any more running stuff. If Badwater had, like, if something like Badwater had only been a little bit beyond that 100, you know, I think probably would have ended up doing that thing. But
it is. It's like 120 miles,
but it's the heat thing. It just seems
that's part of it too.
I mean, it seems like, and it's uphill, right? I mean, it's west coast, and I think it is far net uphill because you go up Mount Whitney. Is that what it is? So it seemed like that's the 100-miler times two as far as difficulty, amount of training.
Oh, I see what you're saying. If it was just a little bit harder, you would have done it. But since it's a lot harder, you didn't do it.
Like 101 miles.
I actually ran. I think my race was 101 miles. Which I don't get enough credit for that. But anyway, but it got to the point where I don't know if I had this exact conversation in my head, but this is definitely the reasoning. It was like, yes, I believe that I could do that if I, like, set out and spent the next 5 years working on only that. Obviously, then you still got to get accepted into the race, and that's not that easy. But, like, it was like, that's not really that meaningful to me, that's how I want to spend that kind of time for that long. And I've had the same thing with like, I don't know, I've really been into like learning languages and stuff, and haven't, none of them have I gotten like fluent in, but I've come across ones where I'm like, I would love to learn Catalan, the language they speak in the province where Barcelona is. But then it's like, just when I've been there, it's like, this is so cool. There's this little language they have here that's not Spanish, it's not French, it's in between. There's all this kind of nationalistic pride around just that. It'd be so cool to learn that. But then I'm like, I can only use it when I'm there and they can understand Spanish. So like, why would I even need to do that? But it seems kind of interesting. And like, what, like, I don't know. There's something that is attractive about those things. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to spend these next years doing this thing and becoming really good at this thing. And very few other people can say that. And it's just like a special thing. But then I'm like, that's not worth it. Like, that's just not like, I should spend that time on something that is meaningful. And that like, I can actually, I shouldn't say meaningful, that is actually useful to me after I put all that time into it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's mm-hmm. what we want to try to figure out here. Like what, like mm-hmm. when is the journey itself enough? Cause that's the appeal of those things. Is like that going right. on that journey and having to do it. Like that's what's interesting. It's not the result of being able to speak in a language is kind of obscure.
But is it though? I mean, or is it that like, because the way you described it, you're like, how cool would it be to be able to go there and speak the language and be part of this kind of natural nationalistic pride, this kind of universal pride? Like maybe like in your mind, what's cool about it? Is it to learn Catalan, or is it to be able to go there and speak to people and have them be like, whoa, that's cool?
Yeah, ultimately it has to be the latter. It has to be like that
right.
payoff, but. When I step back, I'm like, that's not worth it though at all. Like for those few moments, like yeah. that's not worth it. Like yeah. you should learn a language that you can go speak very often, or I mean, learn Spanish, right? In the US, learn that really well so that you can fluently speak with lots of people you run across on the street or at soccer, like all the time do with Holden. I mean, more than half the parents are Spanish speaking. Like that'd be so useful. But
sounds to me like then it's what's your purpose and what is your motivation behind the thing that you are doing. I think that's what Doug was trying to challenge you on with the language example is like, yeah, what is the purpose of it? What are you doing that thing for? And then, you know, going back to like journey versus destination, I think then it might decide like, is that journey worth it or is the destination worth it? And it sounded like to you or from what I was hearing, like you want to be able to use this thing that you have worked so hard to do. So like, you know, if you're spending all this time to learn this language, you want to be able to then put it to use. Whereas like, if you think of like running an ultra marathon, like you're not going to use that once you're done, unless you're going to go run other ultra marathons, which that's cool. And like, maybe that's the use, but is it the experience or is it what comes after the experience?
Right. And I was wondering exactly that. Someone who doesn't intend to become a runner, they don't want to make running their passion of the life, but they say, I want to do an ultra marathon before I die, or I want to do a marathon before I die. Mm-hmm. And like, they just do it. And all you get out of that is the accomplishment of having done it. I guess you gain some fitness on the way. You might also lose fitness on the way. You might hurt yourself or like develop a nagging injury that forever bothers you after that. But it's not a guarantee.
But like, is that enough? Like, is that enough? Is that worth it? Saying that you were able to do this thing? Like, is that enough?
Just saying I got myself to do this. I think so. Well, I mean, I don't know. The process has to be worth it for that, right? Like you have to enjoy that. There's no way you could say it was worth being miserable for 5 years or whatever it took me to get in that kind of shape to run a marathon or an ultra marathon. Not that it takes everyone that long by any means, but it might, if you were starting from scratch and completely mm-hmm. out of shape, you know, that's a multi-year quest
for sure.
And if you hated it, but you just wanted to prove yourself something, I don't see how that could be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I think I would rather like prove to myself that I could make $1 million or something. like grind it out for 5 years to like become
that is useful afterwards, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so there has to be some sort of element of joy in the thing. Like I think where I struggle, and this is maybe changing it this or taking us a slightly different direction, is I like let's use woodworking as an example. Mm-hmm. I have over the years gotten into various types of, you know, woodworking, building tables, building a chair, you know, that kind of thing. And I very much enjoy it. But what's been fun is like learning how to do something on the like small level, right? You know, I've never had that, been able to take that and say like, okay, now I'm going to dedicate hours and hours and years to like make myself much better at this. And so like once I figure out how to do like something a little bit, and this happens a lot with a lot of different hobbies, like drumming is another example. I'm in a band, I play with like a group of guys almost every week, but outside of jamming with them, like I'm not dedicating a lot of time to like getting really good at that craft. And I think what I struggle with, and I don't know if this is a struggle, but what my reality is that like, I like kind of dabbling in a whole bunch of things and exploring them and like figuring out, okay, this is how you play the drums. This is how you build a table. This is how you, you ski or whatever. And then, but not like ever investing all the time and the effort into like getting really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Running so is I kind of the exception, I mean, although, you know, I'm not really good at running, but, you know, like that is the thing that I do spend a lot of time on and have for many years.
I mean, I would say you're really good at running, right? Maybe you're not winning all the races, but most people won't ever do that in terms of how much ultra running you accomplish, you know,
yeah,
that would be you're building something that is exceptional compared to most people. So I think what you like, the strategy you'd apply to everything else is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like it's the opposite of the big goal strategy, right? It's like, yeah. I'm going to do something while the rewards are great relative to the amount of time you have to put in, right? You put in a little bit of work, learn woodworking, and you get a chair out of it. An okay chair, not a good chair. No one can actually use it, but I have a chair in my house that I made.
It's a chair that just sits.
Yeah. I mean, no, but that's right. Like there's the reward. There's a little bit of time and an effort and struggle and investment, mm-hmm. and then you have something and you're like, wow, that's cool, now I can actually do this little thing. But to like make a really good chair might take years to do,
right
so it and sounds that's like where that's where I give up.
Yeah, you're more about the short-term destination than the journey, maybe.
I guess.
I mean, on the surface, that sounds like the much smarter thing to do. You don't have to put in that much time. You get pretty good reward.
Get kind of good at a lot of things,
right? Instead of I'm going to spend 5 years to get really, really good, you know, world-class level rewards in something. And maybe that's not the right word, because it's not always going to be world-class in 5 years by any means. But, you know, something that is very, very hard to get, but it took so long to get it. And I guess maybe the answer is that, like, or that, not the answer, but an added point is, like, that thing that takes so long to get, that has got to have a lot more meaning somehow. Whereas what you're getting out of your stuff that is more dabbling, you're getting more kind of practical joy, entertainment out of it, instead of long-term meaning. It says like, when I die, I can say this thing I did, and that's one of the things that I'm most proud of in my life. I've managed to do that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe I'm never approaching it as a big goal, you know, like kind of, I guess this is what you're saying, but you know, I never got into woodworking to become a master wood craftsman, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was like, do I think I can build this table? You know, how cool would it be to like learn how to do this or build this chair? Mm-hmm. And you know, and then kind of set out to these smaller projects that aren't going to take years to master. You know? Yeah. I mean, I think that's, I don't have a problem with that. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing at all.
Right.
What's different about those things? We're going to use you as our case study right now, Doug. What's different about those like hobbies or you know, passions versus running? Like why are they different pursuits for you?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a good question. You know, certainly like I think part of it is, you know, I build the table or the chair and it just kind of scratched. Like I'm not drawn to wanting to do something bigger and better all that much, mm-hmm. You know, every like once a year or something like that, I'll have a project that I decide I want to do and spend some time in the garage doing it. But with running, I mean, it's like, even now, you know, I've run 500 milers, but there's still like unfinished business there that I want. Like, I just have this burning desire to take care of. And so like there's that itch has never fully been scratched. Plus like there's just an amount of joy that in the routine of running every day that, you know, or everyday joy that comes from the routine of running, that I have never found anywhere else in any other hobby.
Yeah, I think like I said before, I mean, I don't know if I've gotten anywhere yet, because like, I still feel like the process of actually trying to get there, like that needs to be tremendously rewarding on a day-to-day basis for you.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you make a little bit of progress, even when you can't see progress, but you just know you're making it because you showed up again and you worked at this thing, that's rewarding. And it feels like if you're not doing that, then you're not, you know, you're not living like the way you're supposed to live. You didn't spend the day the way you should have spent the day if you didn't make progress towards this thing that means so much to you. And I think if you have that, it doesn't matter at all that the thing is useful. Like, it truly doesn't matter a bit if the actual accomplishment is at all practical, means anything, lasts at all. If day to day, as you're working towards it, it's making you happy. Like, that's the same as, you know, Doug building chairs one day and then doing whatever he does the next day. I have no idea what Doug does all the time.
makes burritos.
You think you should know.
I don't really know what else you would do.
I will say, like, I'm kind of a master craftsman when it comes to burritos. So
there you go.
That I am putting in my 10,000 hours on burrito making.
Well, you need to work at Chipotle because those people are terrible at making burritos for the most part. They always put too much in the burrito, and then it comes out, and then they have to get a second shell.
Yep.
And it's no good.
Yeah, every time. I think it comes back to, though, Doug, you talked about, like, the enjoyment of the process. Like, mm-hmm. We kind of started with this idea that, like, you have to be getting something out of these things that you're doing, like these long journeys or destinations that are far off. And I hate to say, or I don't know, it feels wrong to say, like, it's all about what I'm getting out of this thing. Because like there are pieces about, you know, giving back and what that kind of gives you. But at the same time, like, I do think that's probably a part of it, is like, I keep up a consistent exercise routine because I know I'm building towards my long-term goals, but I also, like, I feel good after I exercise. And so, like, that's a benefit that I'm getting for myself. So,
yeah.
Is that a requirement?
I mean, perhaps it's not even like a discussion, because if you hate the process of running, you're not going to spend the 5 years trying to train for a marathon. You might set that goal and think you're going to, and you might start for a month, but then you're not going to get anywhere. Like, I just think it's almost something, it just doesn't exist. I mean, I don't know. Does it? The people.
I think it depends on how important that goal is. Cause I think, I don't know. I'm not speaking from, I'd love to hear if anybody has this experience, but like, even if you really hate it, but you really want to accomplish that goal, like, I think there are people that will accomplish that goal, even if they hate it the whole time.
Yeah.
Because once they get to the destination, they'll say,
right.
Yeah.
And what? I'm listening to a guy on the Troll podcast. His name is, oh my gosh, I need to look it up. He does the Finding Mastery podcast, I think it is. You guys know who I'm talking about?
No.
Dr. Michael Gervais. And he's like a performance coach. And he's coached all these world-class performers. And he said, I think it was on that podcast, or maybe it was in his book, which I did read, that like, to be very, very top world class in something, like everyone who's like the very best in the world at what they do, they generally have something inside of them that's a little bit twisted that like has given them this obsessive, like, I have to do this thing, even though it doesn't really make me happy, you know, doing this, but it's just, I just have to do it. And the very fact that I'm going to become the best, like, that's where I'm deriving my happiness from. But like, they're not going about it in what would be considered a healthy way. So like the people who are just the very best at their sports generally, I don't know, have some sort of meltdown or something later, right? Like Tiger Woods, Ronaldo, I don't know if he's had a meltdown, but he clearly not someone who, like, I think people envy for how happy he is, because he has said that he just can't ever be satisfied. Mm. Right? The people who can't be satisfied, like, are the ones who become the best, but by exactly that, they're never satisfied. That sort of means that they're not, they can't be that happy, right? They can't be at a point where they're like, I'm pretty satisfied. I'm happy now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I mean,
agree with that.
You kind of have to, if you're going to commit like every waking hour, the people who are the best at things commit just an enormous amount of time to it. Right. And there's no way that you're getting joy from that every single day.
Because your life is completely out of balance by any normal person's standard.
Mm-hmm. And so, you could love the competition.
Go, Doug.
Yeah. I mean,
if it's your job, doesn't make you the best in the world at it, right? To be the best in the world, it needs to be your every waking moment obsession to the exclusion of so many other things. you know, so like you can become the best athlete in the world. It's your sport, but you basically have no teenage years then that are normal, right? You just work on that thing the entire time. So I don't know. Accomplishment is not what necessarily makes people happy. Now, if progress makes people happy, then I guess those people, you could say they are happy because they're constantly making progress and they're being rewarded for it. But mm-hmm. I don't know. So when we got the idea to talk about this, it was because we said like big goals are kind of an important thing for helping people. I think we'd say they're good to have, right? They kind of generally help you to start doing smaller things. Like if someone said, I want to get in shape, you might like, I would typically advise someone like you should have a really big vision for like what you are trying to get to. And if it's not like, if it's not a decent ways away from where you are now, it's probably not going to be very motivating. So like, then it becomes a big goal. And I guess that one, the person obviously is saying this is worth me doing. But I mean, do we think we shouldn't have big goals at all? Perhaps like Doug, like with you and these hobbies, like they're not, I mean, would you say it's a big goal when you set out to make a chair for the first time? Because you said it'd be really cool to do this?
No. Like when I think of a big goal, I'm thinking months in the making, mm-hmm. maybe years in the making. Mm-hmm. Like the first time I built a chair, it was, we took 10 days off of Nomad Athlete around Christmas, something like that. And I was like, this is the project I'm going to work on. And it took me 10 days, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that was it. I was like, okay, I learned a lot in that process. But then I didn't do anything again for a while. Mm-hmm. So
it still seems like I imagine if I were going to do that, like in my head, that's a massive departure for me, like to get into this thing that I have zero knowledge of right now and like produce a chair out of that, no matter how uncomfortable that chair is, as I'm sure yours is, Doug. I must keep emphasizing that.
It's a great chair.
It's fine, you know. No one sits in it.
and that's, I don't know, like that's what's exciting. Like if it's not that, it's hard to get motivated to me. If it's not something that, I don't know, in some weird way seems like an impossible thing or just does not fit me, and I'm gonna like make that fit me, I'm gonna do it. I don't know, that's what's motivating. So I still think, like, I'm a big fan of these big goals, but
sorry to interrupt, but do either of you, are either of you motivated by like just feeling like you're familiar with a lot of different things, like you have a little bit of skill in a lot of different things? Like to me, I would say this, like to me, I would love to be, you know, someone who is familiar with several different languages and is you know, familiar with plants and familiar with like a whole lot of like knowledge and information and skills that are just like, I'm not great at everything, but you know, you put me in any situation and I can handle it and I can, you know, I can feel comfortable in any situation. Like, I don't know, I'm not saying that I'm like that now.
When you get into a basketball game, you can mix it up.
Right. Like if somebody wants to play some pickup basketball, I can get up there and not make a fool of myself, you know, or I get invited to play disc golf and I can do that too, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I think that is motivating to me. And in some ways, like, I think that's what's attractive about, you know, learning a little bit of ukulele or a little bit of guitar and drums is like, you know, I can just do it and be excited about it and like feel comfortable with it, but I don't need to be the best at it. I don't need to be obsessive about it. Mm.
I think that says something about like who you are as a person and like your personality. You sound really curious and like interested and maybe also want to be useful to either yourself or to other people. And not that I'm not curious and not useful, but I think for me, I probably lean more the other direction. I like to be good at the things that I'm putting my time into. And if I'm not necessarily good at them, I probably won't spend my time on it because I know that either like somebody else in my life can do that thing instead. And so I can go to them if they do that thing. So like woodworking, I will probably never in my life do because I know Doug and I can be like, hey Doug, can you build this table for me if I need this table? And like, I know you can do that.
I don't know if you want my table.
As long as everyone can use the table. Yeah, as long as you're okay with yeah. sitting in the corner.
But like, I think that's more the perspective that I come at when I choose. Like, I love to cook. I love to bake. I love to garden. And like, those are the things that I'm thinking of that I really enjoy doing. But like, if, I don't know, if I had to shovel the driveway with snow, that's probably not a good comparison.
I'm sure you can handle that.
I can also handle that. But like I know that I am good at those things. And so I put my knowledge into that. And that's probably why I'm good at them, is because I've put my knowledge there. But I don't know if I'd necessarily, like, learning a language is really interesting to me, but I don't know if I'd ever do it because I don't know if I ever could. And again, like, I know that I can rely on other people. I don't know, this might make me sound really bad, but that, I think that's more of the perspective that I come at, is I have niche things that I like, and I probably, mm-hmm. I like to explore things, but more so in the terms of asking other people to tell me about what they're doing with that versus me doing it kind of hands-on. I think I got that. Yeah. That makes sense.
I think what you said is right. That, like, I think it just comes down to your personality of which what you're going to be your approach to these things.
Yeah.
For me, like, I really like getting into the details of stuff, and I kind of don't care that much if it ends up being practical, which is odd considering what I said earlier about Catalan. It's just really fun to work into the mechanics of something and like focus harder than anyone else. Not anyone else. I don't really care about anyone else, but like, I feel like that is one of my superpowers, is the ability to like actually just keep focusing on something that most people think is really, really boring until I completely understand it in and out, which would be great if I had one thing that I was the best in the world at or really good at, but that hasn't been, I don't have that kind of attention. Like, I can't, I need to switch gears every 3 months or 6 months. So I end up having five things that I do, all, you know, at a high level, I guess, not 50 things like Doug has, but not one thing either. So I think I have a medium amount of things that I go into pretty big depth on. Right. And I think, I don't know. I think it's just sort of, like you said, it just fits your personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, maybe you, like, where your motivation is, what, cause like I talk about baking and cooking and gardening, that's cause I can provide for my family in those ways. And so that's part mm-hmm. of my motivation versus yeah. again, woodworking. Sorry, Doug, I keep hating on woodworking.
No, but like, no, you can hate on it.
My family doesn't need me to build a chair for them. So,
but they got to sit somewhere, you know? I mean,
we have chairs upstairs. But like, I, as you know, personality is a piece of it, but like, maybe coming back as well to that, the motivation and what, like, what you are getting out of it or what you're able to give to others out of the thing that you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did Doug answer why running is so different from the other ones?
I kind of did.
Because you kind of have one thing that you're really specialized in, and you have this broad range of other stuff.
Yeah, that burning itch, and also like the joy. Like
that's right.
Yeah, just the daily joy of it. And but I also think it's not just the racing stuff that gets me motivated, right? You know, a good example is that I went through a phase where I was really unmotivated, you know, the last couple of years until last year, unmotivated by any sort of racing, but I continue to run, you know, a couple times a week at least. Mm-hmm. And part of that, I think, is like the joy of the day to day part of it, but also just kind of, like a long term goal of just being healthy and living longer and you know, being a good parent and a good, you know, having a healthy heart and all the stuff that, you know, that comes from exercise. So
yeah,
you know, where and woodworking doesn't have that. Right. Same benefit.
Depends on what you're building.
Yeah. True.
Right. Yeah, I mean, definitely as you get older and you get other responsibilities and fewer years left, I think, like I said at the beginning, those choices, like I start getting motivated for things that aren't necessarily passions, but you start actually focusing on them enough that maybe they become like the weightlifting, just fitness in general. Like for me, mm-hmm. just, it's not something I really ever love to do. It's just, I do it because it's like healthy and it helps me with a lot of other things. And, you know, I feel like I'm being a good parent, a good example, going to have energy for other stuff. Like, it just seems like something you should do. So I think definitely as I get older, I do more things that I kind of should do. In fact, I do a lot of things that I should do and not so many where like, this is just a pure fun thing. So the name of this episode was When Are the Big Goals Worth It? And we definitely haven't arrived at an answer. We got a little bit of time left. But like, Doug, if someone comes to you as a running coach, are you still a running coach or is that done?
No, I'm not. I'm not coaching anymore.
Okay. Well, if someone did come to you in your coaching days, mm-hmm. before you went full on woodworking guy when you were doing other stuff, so and they said, I really want to run marathon in 3 years from now. Don't ask me why, because mm-hmm. I don't really like running. You know, make me a plan. Like, would you advise that person? Would you ask the person? Like, I don't know. Would you say, you sure you want to do this? Like, look at all this running you're gonna have to do. Or is the fact that they say, I really, really want to do this, is that just like, is that the end of discussion? Like, if someone really wants something, is it right then worth it?
I think you find that out about 3 months in, right? I mean, like right. once it starts getting really hard and uncomfortable and the like initial boost of motivation that comes from deciding you really want to do something wears out and the reality of what it will take sets in, then you find out pretty quickly how, whether it's worth it or not. If someone came to me as a running coach and I would encourage them to try it, get started and see what happens. I mean, part of what sparked this idea for me when we were kind of debating topics was a conversation I had last night with a friend who wanted to run a marathon, and it took him 3 years to do it, and he ran his first 5K, and that was a big thing. And he ran and he trained for a half marathon, and that was his big thing for that year, and it kind of built his way up to the marathon. And it was a multi-year process, but the end goal was always to run the marathon. But he focused on those smaller goals, and that kind of like got him excited and kept him motivated and wasn't too overwhelming or too hard. And then eventually he was able to do it, and he went on to run ultra marathons and et cetera. And what was interesting is that yesterday, when we were talking about it, he's like, yeah, I'm not really motivated by the running stuff anymore. He just ran a marathon last weekend. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think that's probably my last one. But what is really exciting me right now is the idea of a triathlon, like half Ironman. And, but mm-hmm. I don't know how to swim. And, so he's been the past couple of weeks, he's been going to the pool and suffering through, just a couple basic laps, trying to learn how to teach himself how to swim. And like, that feels pretty, a half Ironman, even though he can run a marathon now, is way off in the distance because he can, barely make it a few hundred yards in the pool. And that's cool too. Like, he's setting off on a multi-year journey again, a fitness journey again, that I think ultimately will lead to a half Ironman if he can stay motivated. So, I think it's worth it if there's joy in the smaller wins.
Right.
And there's joy in the process. It can't, in my opinion, it can't just be about that big goal, unless that goal will then open up a whole lot of other things. Like I said, if money is the, if getting out of debt or something like that is the big goal, mm-hmm. and it's just going to be really painful and terrible for the next 3 years for you to get out of that debt. But once you're there, it kind of opens up all these possibilities. It's not just about that, like one high or rush that comes from running a marathon. Then that's worth it, of course. But if it's about a single event that's not going to be life changing in and of itself, then I think you have to have joy in the process.
Yeah. And it sounds like your friend, I mean, maybe he didn't plan to do this, but the goal that you just did and, seemed like, okay, that's it. That's now the foundation for this next thing. So totally. I suppose that's an interesting thing is like, if someone really wants to do something, and they don't necessarily like the process at the beginning, they may find that after they do this thing, maybe they still don't like it, but now they have the ability to do something else and they do something else. And maybe eventually they now can do something they actually do like, because they have built up, whatever foundation they built. I don't know. You mentioned the small steps along the way. And that was something we kind of wanted to talk about. Like, how do you keep focused? Like, cause if one of the pieces of advice for making a change now is to have a big goal in the future, because that's going to give you a reason to make a change now, and that's going to be your vision. How do you stick with it when it is that far off? I mean, Isabel and I talked about this a few weeks ago when I think it was just us on the show talking about goals. And I don't think I've ever had success. Like if I have a really long-term plan, like let's say my plan was run an Iron or do an Ironman, and like so run a marathon will be the year one goal of this 3-year plan. And 6 months before that is run the half marathon or do some short distance swim event or something. I've never had that work where you set a long 3 or 5 year goal and then set, you know, work backwards from there, set all these little milestone goals that are going to keep you motivated in the short term. I've never had that. I've never stuck with that for anything. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if either of you two have ever actually done that. Cause we've all done some things that are big as far as the running goes, big distances. Mm-hmm. Have you had those milestone goals along the way?
Yeah, I think for me, something that we use, you know, Doug, you used the example of like getting out of debt. And that was like, that was a journey that my family took a couple of years ago. And I think for me, like celebrating those little wins and like really making sure that you are, you know, you're feeling like you're accomplishing something as you go, that's really important to me. And I think I have set some of those like multi-year goals. Like I, right now in my ultra running, like a 50K in June isn't where I'm stopping. Like I want to then keep going mm-hmm. and building. And, but it's those little milestones and knowing that I'll be able to celebrate those little milestones that keeps me motivated towards that long-term goal. So being able to, and there's definitely two schools of thoughts when it comes to this, like you either celebrate and feel good about that celebration or you wait until the destination and then celebrate just that. And I definitely am a celebrate along the way that keeps me motivated.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think you have to. I mean, I think even if you say you're not, and you're not going to be happy till the big thing's done, like Doug kind of got it. Like you're just not going to last very long if you're not experiencing mm-hmm. joy in the process. Isabel, do you have dates though on the calendar for like the stuff that's beyond this, or is it more informal? Like I'm first going to do this thing. And then once I've got that, I'm going to think about the next level, but ultimately I want to do this next thing, but it's not like I just set this date in the future and then I work backwards from there and chose all these milestones.
Right now, I say there's a lot phases of life. In the phase of life that I'm in, I haven't set hard dates for those future ones. Mm-hmm. But I know I know this year I want to run a 50 miler. I know in 2025, I'd like to do multiple 50 milers and then probably something bigger. Like I have kind of small chunked goals. But I need the flexibility in life right now to be able to choose when I'm doing those things. But for me, that doesn't impact the fact that I want to do it. Cause like I have that drive, as Doug talked about, like that burning itch. Like I have that drive that I'm going to set those dates and I know I'm going to set those dates, but that doesn't work for everybody. And I think, you know, setting those dates and having those goals is also really motivating for, you know, for people when you're trying to figure out those achievements.
Mm-hmm. This is why I'm not the best in the world or anything, because big thing I'm going after isn't like 3 months from now or 6 months from now, I can't imagine getting there that soon. Like I'm just not going to stay motivated for it. So I think the way that I've ultimately, the thing that works for me is the opposite. Goals. What's that?
I said, what about little goals? What little goals can you have?
I know. And that's the hard thing is you want to do big stuff and you want to do it quickly. At least I want to do big stuff and do it quickly. And that of course leads to failure very often. But I think what has worked for me is the opposite. Like when I didn't set out to run a 100-mile race. I mean, I set out to run a marathon and then it was like, okay, but I could do a 50 miler. And then once I did that, I was like, I still didn't plan to do 100, but once I did a 50, I was like, well, now I want to do this next thing. So I think for me, like mm-hmm. it's been the opposite of having this big vision and figuring out the milestones that work towards it. It's having this, what's the next thing? What's the next aid station you can get to? Just get that far. And then from there, figure out what's next. So yeah, interesting that I mean, I haven't really thought about that before, but that is, that has fit me better.
You know, I guess I hadn't thought about this before either, but I think I'm, especially my like running journey is pretty similar. It was like, oh wow, like this ultra running thing is pretty cool. I should run a 50K. And then I ran that and I was like, oh wow, now people are running 50 milers. That I think I could do that. And now, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to go try that. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's interesting. Matt, what is your big goal right now? Like, what are you working towards right now?
I don't think I have a big goal right now. I spend a lot of time playing the piano right now, but that's but there's no end goal with that. Like I'm never going to go do a piano recital again. I did that when I was a kid a couple times, and it was fine, but like, that's not why I would do it. But that actually, it leads me to questions. Like I ask that a lot, like, why am I doing this? Like, what's the point? And ultimately it comes back to like, it's fun to do. It feels good to make a little part, like to hit one correct note, right? Or two notes at the same time, or a couple chord, right? To hit something, it just feels good in that second. And it's just, when I'm done that, it's not like I'm glad I spent an hour because now I've made progress. It's more like, that was a pleasant way to spend an hour. Like, I just felt good during that time. So that's the thing I've been doing recently.
It's enjoying the journey. Doesn't matter the destination.
But there's no journey. Yeah. I mean, there's not even a destination. It's just doing it. Mm-hmm. So there you go. I don't know. I don't know if we got anywhere. We didn't, but we explored it a little bit.
Maybe there is no answer.
We have people. There's been an, I mean, shockingly, an ongoing conversation, argument, grew to legends against everybody else about weightlifting and whether it destroys your body, or whether weightlifting can be an important part of a longevity plan, which has zero to do with what we were talking about. Not even closely related, I'm thinking.
It started.
We said it a while ago, something like that.
Somebody, yeah. It started because Dale said that I lift weights more for longevity and mental stuff, so that when I'm 70 and I break a hip, I don't die and can get off the pot. So, you know, it started with this kind of like long-term goal vision in mind. And then it just turned into do a whole debate around the scam of gym clothing, gym equipment, workout books, and workout drug supplements.
Garuda Legends loves the contrarian viewpoint of things. That I thought it was just an omnivore versus vegan thing, but now I see it's just, I think Garuda just likes to be on an island against everybody else. But we like you, Garuda. We always shout out Garuda. It's good. I like it. Bruders agrees with you, Isabel. She says, I have learned to celebrate my long runs instead of just thinking, oh crap, the race is X times longer. I'm going to crash and burn. I've definitely thought a lot of times in my life.
I feel that way a lot.
Yeah. That was little Britters, achievements
lead to big accomplishments.
That was Britters.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You do. Yeah, I mean, I do both of those things, right? Or I used to. You celebrate the fact that you just, for the first time ever, ran double-digit miles. And then you also realize you have to do 2.5 times that to get a marathon. And I can't do that. It's not going to happen.
I usually compare my times at that point. I'm like, oh, I did this pace for 10 miles. I can probably keep doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was how I made the biggest bad estimate of my life, is when I could run a 7:15 mile. My friends and I said, well, by the time we've trained, we'll be able to do that same pace for 26 miles. Just right now, we haven't trained yet. But once we train, we'll just extend that pace.
Oh yeah.
So we said we'd qualify for Boston. That's how that happened.
See, I'm way slower than that. So it's actually reasonable for me to, you know, run like 13 minute miles for a long, long time. It's reasonable. I can do that.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's it. I mean, I just started thinking about the Boston thing. I was like, that was kind of one of those goals for me. That, like, took all this work, or best-selling author, like, to do that. Yeah. Like, that was one of those things.
Best-selling,
like,
author. That's a good one. I was gonna bring up the marathon or Boston, because that was a multi-year, like, obsessive
thing. It felt like such a huge journey and such an important thing. But then, does it matter 10, 15 years later? I would say the best-selling author thing doesn't matter. Like, it does, like, because that's not for me. For Robert Cheek, it matters, because his whole career, he wants to be a speaker and do more books like that. And so, like, you know, super important accomplishment for him. For me, I don't think my life would be any different right now if I didn't have that. I would just still want that thing. I wouldn't have checked it off. I'd have this itch that still needs to be scratched. Boston is different, though. Boston, I think, definitely did shape a whole lot, right? That made me become a runner. Had to learn how to run, had to learn how to train. Made me start
writing. Your career.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, all kinds of reasons to do that. Although none of those, I think, would have been predictable. I didn't at the beginning think I'm going to do this, and this is smart because it'll launch a career and it'll get me to do ultra running after that. It was just, I really want to do the thing. So I don't know. I mean, maybe when you really, really want to do something, even if you do not like the process, maybe there's some higher power, deeper knowledge. The universe knows what you need to do, because it's going to lead somewhere else. So maybe we should never question anybody who really wants to do something.
It's true. Could just be opening yourself up to possibility. You don't know.
Right. Surrendering. Jesus take the wheel situation.
Well,
maybe not.
Could be.
It's an interesting point, though, to consider. Like, you had this goal that you acted, this big goal that took you a long time that you actually achieved, but like, look at what it opened up to you now. Like, maybe that was the real destination, but you didn't know that destination right away. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, good. All right, now we got somewhere. We
boom.
We reached the point where we can end the show. All right. Well, thanks for listening to us, everyone. We tried to do a little something different today. So far, the four-way conversations have been everybody go around, say the way you do a particular thing, and then make fun of everybody else for the way they do the particular thing. And that has resulted in fun episodes. I've enjoyed those. But we tried to mix it up a little bit today by doing more of a, I guess, a philosophical discussion, but hopefully a little bit practical as well. So thank you for listening. Thanks to those of you who showed up and argued in the comments the whole time about weightlifting. That is great. As well as to those who showed up and didn't participate at all, or those who didn't argue or whatever. We appreciate everybody. Be sure to smash the like button on the YouTube video. That helps us because we are really focused on that and this whole live content format recently. And that's it. Keep listening to the Outlier Health Podcast. We'll be back next week with five more shows like we keep doing.
Sounds thanks, great.
Isabel and Doug. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Later. Good luck on your races, everybody.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, everyone.